It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Alongside former Packer Brian Belaga, here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
The best 60 minutes of your day, the Brian Belaga Homer Hour. The only thing better is to watch the putt made on the 18th hole by JJ. I know he has the last name Spawn, but everybody should remember him as JJ. A nobody. I think he's been playing on the tour for like 9 years. The longest putt he's ever made was on 18. And the longest putt he'd ever made was the one he made earlier. I don't know what hole it was.
Wasn't he a walk-on in college, too?
He was a walk-on, yes. And has played on various tours. He's played everywhere. He's also, I believe, first of all, I should welcome Brian Belaga. Welcome.
Thank you.
I've decided I'm not going to ask how you are.
Okay.
But I am going to ask, is there just something that you want to lead with? I think that's a better question. If your answer is no, that's fine. But I feel like I'm neglecting my job. It is the Brian Belaga Homer Hour. But I don't want you to feel bad if you don't have anything, because I don't want anybody to think, well, come on. Haven't they prepared? And the answer is no. Our lives are our preparation.
Yeah, I mean, you're jumping into it. I think that golf tournament, I mean, I don't know if people watched it or if they didn't watch it. If you didn't watch it, you missed a great 4 days. And I know, you know, you listen to players as they got done with their round and how frustrated they were, but that is a test of golf. That is a challenge of what they went through, and you saw the winner one under. Like, I'm sorry, but like that's hard. When professionals can only go one under par over 4 days, that is a test of golf. And to me, that is entertaining. Like, that is some of the best golf I've watched in a long time. Watching guys go 27 under isn't fun. Like, that's not entertaining to me. Like, I don't want to see guys make birdies and eagles on every single hole. I want to see guys have to try to make pars when bogeys sometimes are good. And that's what we watched this weekend. And it was an incredible performance by JJ, as you put. There were points in that round. I mean, I think he started off with six bogeys in the first.
He had five bogeys on the first six holes.
Yeah.
He shot 40 on the front. Just so you know what 40 is like, Brian Belaga is not happy when he shoots 40 on a nine. Is that correct?
I shot it Saturday. Okay. I shot it 40 on the front.
I didn't
on
ask
Saturday.
If you shoot it. I said, when you shoot 40, you're not happy. He shot 40, and it was amazing it was 40 because that's five over par, and he was five over par after six holes. I don't believe it's ever been done before. I don't believe anybody has ever started that poorly and then finished the way he did. But go to work.
It was incredible. It was literally incredible. And to see how he battled back, and you saw it slowly happening, right? You saw it slowly be coming back, making a putt here, making a putt there. But then, I mean, you could say what you want, but the utter collapse by Burns and Scott at the top, seeing both those guys shoot 78, 79 in the final round is,
Yeah, wow. Well, everybody collapsed other than two guys, JJ and McIntyre. And if they hadn't shot so well, I would argue with you, Brian Belaga, and say the course was unfair. You can't say it's unfair when players playing at the same time, two of them play so well.
Yeah, no, exactly. But the thing is, like, you look at the way the tournament ended. Mm-hmm. It ended. I mean, like, it was one under. Then the next guy was what? A one over, and then it went down from there. Like it was a tight leaderboard.
Yeah, it was like five. Yeah, but I think that they stopped play once. They could easily have stopped it again. I mean, there was an amount of water that was incredible, given how course the course was anyway. But they all had to play under it. So,
yep. Well, the Burns ruling was bad.
Yes.
The Burns ruling was really bad.
I mean, when he had to put on a swimsuit to hit the shot, I think they should have known that maybe there was too much water. But I don't know the rules well enough to know. And the problem was that I'm sure they're thinking, look at what other positions they've been in and the shots they hit. They just didn't play well enough. He was unlucky, but still, he doesn't have to hit the shot that he did. If he knows it's that wet, all right? Seems to me you adjust the shot that you take, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what that is. So.
Yeah, I don't know what. I don't know what he hits in that situation, right? Like, I don't know what he does at that point in time.
I am putting ESPN the top 10 on suspension probation. Do you realize that putt? What was it? 64 feet or something? I don't even.
Yeah, 65 feet.
65 feet was not the top play of the day.
What?
It was number two. Somebody sent that to me on Twitter. Make sure it's accurate because sometimes people make stuff up on Twitter. Twitter's only, or ask you Wikipedia. Yes, I believe that they should admit the mistake. That should be the number one play of the year.
Yes.
No one has ever done anything close to that. And the only thing that takes away a little bit is he didn't need to make it to win. All he needed to two putt. So people should be aware of that if they weren't watching. He didn't win because of that. He won by two strokes because of it. So he didn't need to make it. But that doesn't change how incredible it is because there are many players that have three putted in that situation and ended up going into the playoff or something. So
absolutely.
It's one of the greatest shots in the history of golf, understanding the importance of a major and the importance of the U.S. Open. The greatest game, the greatest tournaments for an American are Masters in the U.S. Open. Some pick one, some pick the other. But that, for example, the shot that DeChambeau hit last year, that was nice. That was impressive. Not as good as this one.
I agree.
He hit it in.
I mean, so look at it this way, right? Like, think about amateur golfers, right? Like, just think about us. What are the chances of us making that putt and us getting lucky and hitting a DeChambeau shot out of the bunker like that? Like, there's a chance we can get lucky and hit a DeChambeau bunker shot, right? Like,
yeah.
Like,
no, there's a good chance that you might never in your life make a putt 64 feet, ever.
Correct. Exactly.
I don't know that. I'll have to check at the Muskego Lakes. I made an eagle once on a par five in a scramble. But I don't know that a scramble really counts. Well, maybe it does. I still had to putt it. But I'd have to check. I'm not sure. I'm going to have to go out on the course and see if I can say I actually did it once. But
yeah. I'm not saying DeChambeau shot's easy. I'm saying, like I said, you get lucky maybe. And, you know, you get it out of the bunker and it flies. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you get lucky. But like making a 64-foot putt that's, you know, breaking, it looked like it broke about 4.5 feet under the circumstance it was. I mean, incredible. So to me, it is one of the greatest
shots. I would say that if you hit a game-winning three in the seventh game of the NBA Finals or in the final game of the NCAA, more than 90 feet. Now, the court is 94 feet, so you'd have, if you hit it short of the backcourt free throw line, I'll give you credit for taking over the number one spot, but it's got to be that far away. And again, with the game on the line, okay, you'd only have to be you'd be down by one, and with 1 second to go, you make a 90 footer to win the game by two. I'll say you'll trump JJ. But I want to do my discount liquor Twitter poll question, Brian. That ESPN recognizing the stupidity of it not being the play of the day should announce that it will be the play of the year. They probably they do that in December, right? They have the top 10 plays of the year. Don't they do that, Pebble? Yeah, they should say, barring an alien playing or something, I don't know, this will be the top play of the year. I don't know how you could meet. The only way you could beat it is if you don't think golf's important.
Correct.
I mean, like, there could be something epic in lacrosse, and I'm going to have a hard time making it. One, you score the game-winning goal from a hotel across the street. I don't know. I've been fascinated because he's different. According to Wikipedia, he's a type 1 diabetes. He's a diabetic, which is, I don't know how many players did you ever play with that were type 1 diabetic?
I don't believe any.
Yeah.
I don't believe any.
Ron Santo was the first player that I remember back in the 60s, and then he died of various ailments because he didn't adhere to the diet you need to have if you're a diabetic. But, it said he was type 2, and then they couldn't. They gave him the bad, I don't know, the whatever they gave him didn't work, and then they realized he was type 1. And no one mentioned it in his ceremony. I just thought, that's pretty rare now. I would ask somebody, is it okay if I mention it? He seemed calm enough, you could ask him anything.
Yeah. That guy seems about as cool on the golf course as you can get.
Yes.
Like, doesn't seem bothered by anything.
And they told the story once that he was very unhappy with his play and was ready to give up. And on a plane, he saw the movie Wimbledon, which is a story of some unknown guy who becomes and wins Wimbledon. And it made him think that maybe he could still do it.
How about that?
I know. Makes me want to watch Wimbledon. Maybe I could get a 4-hour show again. I don't know. Anyway, it's the whole way he played. And McIntyre is just, there's no way to describe. I mean, I don't know. You think of a quarterback in the first quarter, he throws 3 interceptions. And then after the first three quarters, you're down by 14. He throws for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. It just doesn't happen. People don't respond that way when they're on that day struggling so much, as we saw with many of the other players.
Yep.
Once they lost it and not everybody watches. This is me being older than you. They used to say the U.S. Open doesn't start until the final 9 holes, but you never got to watch anything but the final 9 holes. They'd show you the final 9 holes on Saturday, and then on Sunday, maybe a couple hours on ABC, and that was it. So you had no idea of what was going on like you did yesterday.
Yeah, the coverage was great. You got to see everything going on from almost the first tee off.
Yes.
I mean, it was fantastic. And the coverage was great.
Coverage is especially great when they're just hacking it up.
Yes.
You just never see that.
No, it's amazing. I've never seen more one-arm finishes in my life.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic. It reminds me of when I go out with my buddies and we hack it around. It's like, this is great. Like, this is fantastic. This is golf, you know.
All right. It is 5:15. We have addressed that. Do you agree with my club that the ESPN should announce in agreement that they messed up totally, that it will be the number one play of the year, his 64 foot? Because I look forward and challenge the Institute. I always do that on Twitter. I love it because the Twitter Institute is strong, a little mean, but strong. They'll come after you. If there's something that has occurred in this season better than that, let me know, because I will right now state how many months ahead the number one play of the year, the putt. What was it? 60 what?
65 feet.
65 feet. That's 20 yards. Think of a football field. Yes.
Yeah.
Think of that. It's more than 20 yards, actually. It's almost 22 yards. No,
nothing's beating that. I mean, something crazy has to, like you said, like something absolutely wild has to happen. And like you look at what's going on, like, right, like And you can't talk about like a regular season NFL game like that. Like, no, you can't put that in the same context of what this is, a major championship. So like in the context of it, it is the biggest play.
The catch the Giants made. Who was the guy who caught David Tyree or whatever on that pass by Eli Manning?
Yeah.
That I would say you'd have a chance, but even that isn't at the end of the game, like the last play.
Yeah, not the last play. Yeah.
As this was. All right, any questions that you have for Brian Bulaga? Of course, you go to the chat and in YouTube. What is it under? ESPN Milwaukee?
ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube.
And so you can have any questions, because I got questions. And I got a statement that I will allow the break so Brian can argue if he wishes to. The discussion was there was some question that was asked which quarterback in the division has the most pressure. And I thought, that's not the question. The question is, does everybody realize there is absolutely no pressure on Jordan Love? There are few players in the history of the league that have had less pressure than he does. You know why? What's he making? $55 million. And let's say he has a horrible year this year. What's he going to make next year? $55 million. And you know what? He's still the starting quarterback. He throws one touchdown pass and 33 interceptions. Next season, he's making $55 million, and he is your starting quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. And only Brian Bulaga can explain how that creates any pressure, even the height of an ant. Next.
This is the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. Brian Bulaga, the doctor of football. But there's more. Partners, please.
That's right. I want to talk about my friends at Surfside. Summer is heating up, and there's nothing more refreshing than an ice-cold Surfside iced tea and vodka, or Surfside lemonade vodka to break the heat. Listen, there's a lot of options out there for the drinks on the shelf. Believe me, it's confusing, but let me tell you why Surfside is my favorite. It tastes cleaner than all the other ones. It doesn't have that sugary, nasty taste when you get done drinking a couple of them. You can, believe me, enjoy more than just one because they're just that good. There's a bunch of different flavors. My favorite's the half lemonade, half tea, but there's peach tea, raspberry lemonade, so many more. Believe me, trust me, you're going to love these things. Made with real brewed tea and real vodka, Surfside's only 100 calories, 2 grams of sugar, and zero bubbles. That's right, no carbonation, so it's easy to sip and enjoy, no matter what your plans are this weekend. Look for the can with the sunset stripe, sold at bars, restaurants, and stores near you. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly.
Fisco Auto Body, so you'll have an auto body place forever. How am I so sure it's right? Well, Fisco Auto Body in Forest Home in Franklin, it's a family business owned since 1931. It's not what they do, it's who they are. It's still in the family. It's still being done by the Fiscos, which means consider and think about what age they probably start doing this. Yeah, long, long. And so that's how they can be that good. On Forest Home in Franklin, Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin, expert workmanship, guaranteed for the life of your vehicle. You'll thank them, and at some point you'll thank me for telling you about them. I like that. Fisco, 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 to remember the name. I did a tease the way you do a tease, so I said there are very few people ever in their life that will feel less pressure than Jordan Love feels right now. Whatever he does, however poorly he does it, there will be no price to be paid. He's going to be the starting quarterback next season in 2026 if healthy, and he's going to be making $50 million. Tell me how there can be any significant pressure at all on such an individual. And doing so now will be Brian Bulaga.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at it from that standpoint. Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of guarantees in his deal right now, right? I mean, he just inked it last year, and there's a lot of security in his contract. I think it's from him personally, right? I think is where the pressure is going to come, right? Like, I think that's where it's going to come. It's going to come from a personal standpoint. And a pride standpoint, and that's where it is, because he knows how good of a player he is. He knows the standard that's set, and he knows, like, obviously how well he played, you know, his first year as a quarterback. I'm not saying he played bad last year, but there were moments that were up and down last year, and he knows how well he can play. So the pressure is going to come from just himself and what he expects from himself and kind of what he wants to live up to his teammates. But you look at it from a whole, yeah, I mean, like, listen, he's very secure in his deal. Like, I mean, you look at the rest of those guys on that list, right? Like, nobody has any, like McCarthy and Williams, like, those guys need to prove that they can win in this league. Like, honestly, like, they need to prove that they can win. Obviously, I say Goff and Love are the bottom two guys, and the two young guys are at the top. They have the most to prove, and Goff and Love are
right.
Goff
what happens
at the bottom?
Here's pressure. Okay, if I screw up, I'm done. All right, that's the biggest pressure.
Yeah,
like, okay, there is zero of that for Jordan Love. He can't do anything badly enough. The only way that he doesn't play next year is if he loses a leg. That they will not play him with one leg, or if he gets an injury. That was probably a mean way to put it. But, and I just know the players or anybody in their life, the pressure is I mess up, I lose what I have.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's really all just, It's an internal pressure that you put on yourself, right? Like, it's not about, like, obviously he's at a point now, contractually and financially, that the money isn't the pressure point. It is the play and the standard, right? Like, and now it is a performance pressure, right? And to me,
well, and if there's a year, whenever it is, where you risk losing the 50 and that's over, and granted, you got. You know, whatever you have in the bank can make you feel, but that's also a pressure that I'm sure exists.
Yeah. No, yeah, and that'll come down the road, right? Like when you're playing for an extension, for sure. Yeah, I mean that's a different story, right? Like we could talk about that when that rolls around, but that's not for some time now. So, to me, he's playing for, you know, what he expects to be his standard. I mean, you look on the flip side, right, of that list. I think J.J. McCarthy, obviously, he's got
huge pressure.
Yes. Because they did it last year with Sam Darnold, right? Like, and now they bring in him, and you know what's going to happen if it starts going rocky. Not just the fans, but the head coach, potentially the players are going to go, we could have had Aaron Rodgers. You know, we said no to Aaron, and we stuck with this, and this isn't going well, and the fans are going to start talking about that. We could have done this, this, and this. And that's the pressure that he has on his shoulder now. They put everything on him. Everything was loaded onto him when he hasn't even really taken a preseason snap, technically, right? Like, so they're counting everything on him. And it's not the same as when they handed the reins over from, you know, Favre to Aaron and now Aaron to Love. Like, you got to see these guys in training camp and preseason for years, right? Like they got to know those guys in time. This is completely different. J.J. McCarthy had a medical redshirt. Like that's what it was. It was a medical redshirt where he didn't do anything.
He could be done after this year.
But I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't think it's going to happen. No, I think, I mean, they're going to give him more than this year. I mean, at minimum next year too, I think he'll get 2 years to get this thing right. You wonder how it couldn't work out with the amount of talent they have over there, but that's what's going to make it so glaring if it doesn't work, right? Like that's what's going to make it so glaring if it doesn't work is the amount of talent they have offensively and what they were able to do last year with Darnold. Like that is what's going to make it so obvious. It's not like, oh, this was a team that was already struggling offensively and, you know, we'll see how the rookie can improve it a little bit and he'll get better. No, like they were good offensively last year. It wasn't like they were a dud. So we'll see how that kind of improves up. Then obviously with Williams, to me, was it Was it the head coach? Was it the offense? Or is the new head coach going to solve all these issues?
Yeah, and if the new head coach can't solve any of them,
yeah,
I don't. He's not going to be done because they have too much invested. But
yeah,
he's going to be.
That's my question. Like,
he's going to be in trouble.
Yeah, but then you. Well, that's exactly right. Then you start. Who do you start looking at? Is it the player? Or is it the coach? Well, you did all this to get Ben Johnson, right? And
he's taking
so well.
He's taking all the pressure. They've done everything. I don't know what else you could do. They got all the offensive line. They've got other skilled people, and they brought in the great mind. I've asked you before, but it isn't required that he be great all the time. But he's got to show something. Or
exactly
the head coach isn't committed to him. He can move on, right?
Yeah, they did everything that they were supposed to do this offseason, right? Offensive line, head coach, new ideas, everything. They did everything, Chicago, from, protecting Caleb Williams' standpoint. So let's see it, right? Like, let's see it. Change of scheme, better offensive line, everything, right? Well, let's see how it goes. Like, I mean, that's the better, if you put all these better things around him, let's see how that turns out. So, I take Tauscher's list and flip it. Like, that's how I look at it. I think the two guys, Love and Goff, are at the bottom. That's the way I look at it.
I'm joining your club. Third quarter with Brian Bulaga. I don't have a tease near as good as the last one. Next. Dr. Aaron Holtebeck and his team make vision care a top priority with the latest technologies at their state-of-the-art Brookfield office. I went there long ago and told me they've been doing it great for over 20 years. I said, impressive, he says, but not good enough. You know what I mean? He says, yeah, we got to do even better. So we've added Dr. Nausheen Abbas has joined the team so that we can deal with even more issues of eye care at the very best. Now accepting new patients, not happy with 20 great years, got to get even better. That is Holtebeck Eye Center. Don't mess with your vision, whatever the age, whatever the problem. Trust the experts from Holtebeck Eye Center in Brookfield near the corner of Calhoun and Capitol. Learn more about their services at Holtebeck.com. Mention that I suggested you put it up as the discount liquor Twitter poll question, right, Pebble?
I did indeed. At the Homer Hour on Twitter, at ESPN Milwaukee on Twitter.
And that it should be the 65-foot putt by JJ should be, we're on a first-name basis, should be the play of the year for the year 2025, even though it's June. And they messed up by not even having it the number one last night. Someone mentioned that there was a great catch. The home run robbery by a center fielder beats it by far in the lots of years left. And I said, if he had no glove, maybe. We see catches, amazing catches, every night on top 10 at every level of play. You see it in college, and as I said, and then mentioned it, he could have two-putted and still won. Yes, but that doesn't change the length of the putt and the situation that it was. It sealed it. And again, I used to think that the catches were amazing in baseball, but as a result of the top 10, I don't.
Yeah. They happen all the time.
Yes.
They happen all the time.
I'll bet every night there is an amazing catch. Now, the ones that I am impressed by, like if you bust the fence down or something, or you flip over and we don't see the person anymore. Sometimes they can be even more amazing on the sidelines rather than, I'm standing by my position. And again, I think it was the greatest finish for a Grand Slam event since literally when Johnny Miller on the same course shot a 63 and came from. But he played so much earlier than everybody else. If that had happened yesterday, everybody would have complained that there was an unfair disadvantage to the people playing at the end because.
Correct.
I can't remember last week, but I can't remember watching many matches or tournaments, I should say, where there was as much water as there was.
No,
and they spent all this time. Yeah.
Tons.
All right, now we get to, unless you have another tough Packer question. I was going to ask the tough Packer question. Who's going to be the first one to depart, Goody, LaFleur, or Jordan Love? But I don't know that there's any real point to that. That just seems like a mean question.
I mean,
nobody's going to depart after this year. That's why I think it's mean. There's no way. They're all back for another year.
Yes. No one's going anywhere. Yes. No one's going. Yeah. No one's going anywhere. And I would even say not for 2 years. I would say not even for 2 years. And you know, I think, you know, you look at Matt's resume as a coach. You look at Goody the way, regardless of what who he signs. I mean, the guy has been bringing in good free agents. He's been drafting well. If you look at the young talent that he's been bringing in, you could say what you want, right? But the way the team is run and the players that are there, I mean, there's good players, right? The team is good. It's a good team. Could it be better? Of course. I think we could always say that, right? Like, you could always say the team can be better, right? Like, and you always feel that way. But you look at it as a whole, and I think he's done a good job, right? And especially he's done a good job when you move on from a Hall of Fame quarterback, like, right? And that's going to be the toughest part, right? When you move on from that, you got to rebuild the entire identity of the team and what you do. And he's done that, and he's in the process of that. So I think he's done good with that. And Jordan Love, like, I think he's going to be there for a while. Like, I really do. I don't think this is a short-term thing. I think he's going to be there for a while. So, this isn't like a one-year or a two-year thing. I think they're going to be together for a while here.
All right, to a better question, because I'm stealing this from Tauscher, because I've talked about, I think, the importance of, you know, they need to get to the NFC Championship game. But Tausch focused, when I was listening, to the need to win the division. And I thought, I think that's where teams used to start it, because they know how much better that puts you in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So that makes, I'm willing to say no. They got to win the division. The most important thing is win the division, and it speaks to how good Detroit is, how good their coach has been, but I don't know. I'm asking you, because coaches used to say it always started with win the division and we'll take it from there. Is that accurate? Is that what they said to you or not?
100%. You have to. The first goal is always win the NFC North. That was the first goal, because you knew if you did that, you were going to get one out of the four seeds, right? And you would get a home playoff game. And that's the most important thing is winning the division, getting a home playoff game, one way or the other, right? Like, so to me, that is the most important thing to kick this thing off is assert your dominance over the division. Now, it's the way this division's been building, easier said than done, right? Like, this is probably the most competitive this division has been. I'm thinking back to it's been a while since it's been super probably when Detroit was making their playoff run, when Sue was there. And Stafford,
even though the Bears
there.
Won it in 2010 and the Packers, and that has probably misguided all of us to forget the importance of winning the division.
Yes.
Generally, if you don't win the division, you're not going to do what they did in 2010. We'll have to check. The Institute, how many teams have won the Super Bowl not winning their division versus how many have won the Super Bowl winning their division?
Yeah, I mean, it just sets you up in a better position, because, like you said, it doesn't give you that 7-1 technically 7-2 matchup that you're set up with right off the get, right?
Yeah.
You get set up with a 7-2 matchup or a 6-3. that's unfavorable, right? Like, and you just don't want to start out with that. So, to me, I think a lot of people are going into this season, I think, looking at, you know, the division's already written off, right? Like, hey, let's focus on. I don't think so. Like, I don't look at it that way as much. Do I think it's going to be difficult to win? Absolutely, because I think Detroit's still going to be really good. We're going to see about Minnesota and J.J. McCarthy, right? Like, we're going to see how he plays and how he is as a quarterback.
No, I feel like they got to beat Detroit. You got to beat Detroit. Not even thinking about Chicago, not even thinking about Minnesota. And
No, you can't think about those two teams yet until they get out there and play, right? Like, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, obviously, Minnesota, I think, has a little more juice behind their name because of, you know, what they even did last year with Sam Darnold, and they're returning, obviously, pretty much everybody.
Yep.
The defense is still really good. I think Minnesota, if the quarterback play is good, they're going to be good. Like, that's just what it is. Chicago is going to be the outlier, and how quickly can they take to the Ben Johnson offense? That's really what it is. But I'm not, like, looking at this as, all right, let's hope Green Bay can be a 5 seed. No. I'm not there yet. Like, I think Green Bay can be very competitive in the division and, you know, push Detroit for, you know, for the North.
Yeah,
I
want the position of this show, which of course is your show, so you can change it. The number one thing everybody should be thinking about regarding the Green Bay Packers is win the division. And I think that would already have been the point, except that everybody has 2010 and go, Homer, well, no, you don't have to.
Yeah, you wanted those stats too, Homer. Since the start of the Super Bowl era in 1967, 7 NFL teams have won the Super Bowl as a wild card or non-division winner.
Mm-hmm. 7!
Yeah.
1967 was a long time ago.
The Packers were one of those in 2010.
Yeah. Right. Now, I do say this, and I'm curious because now you have more wild cards than ever before, right? Like, when did the league become all the divisions of four teams, right? 8 divisions of 4 teams, right? I don't think they changed because, I mean, you remember when the Packers had 5 teams in the division. I don't know, when did they become 8? Because I would think then you'd have to assess, what has it been since that time?
Yeah, the teams transitioned to 4 team divisions in 2002.
Okay, since 2002, that's when I would also like to know how many wild cards.
So that means there's been 1, 2, 3, 4.
Right.
The Steelers in 2005, the Giants in 2007, the Packers in 2010, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2020.
Okay, so you do have a little bit better chance. That's 4 in 23 years.
Well, wouldn't the Giants have been in 2011? The Giants won in 2011 as the 7 or 6.
Did they? Let me see here.
They beat us. We were the one.
Yeah. That's correct. All right. We will get there.
Oh, they won the division. They won their division, though. They were 9-7. They finished first.
Oh, they won their division.
Oh,
you didn't even know what that team was. Come on.
I thought they were the 6th seed.
They were 9-7, but they finished first. It says here they finished first.
They may
NFC's.
Not have had the same setup for the seeds.
Oh,
then.
Okay. I thought they were the 6. That's my bad.
No, it's my bad because I didn't even know.
No, I didn't remember it either. Who was the 6 that year? Who was the 6th seed?
Well, look that up. We need a break, and then we'll get some answers for you. Now, that's a good tease. And also, the most amazing thing you have ever seen in sports, like the finish of a game. We mentioned the U.S. Open. That you don't have to, if you have to think, then you don't have an answer. Because everybody, I don't care what level it was, it could be high school, college, where you saw something and it was so incredible, even more than a 65-foot putt.
The 6th that year was Detroit.
Okay. All right. I'm like you. How is that?
Yeah, the Giants were the 4th seed. So they played 4. The Packers was the number 1 seed, yeah.
Okay. And they won their previous game, right?
Yeah, the Giants were the 4. They beat the 5 seed Atlanta 24-2.
So it's 1 versus 4. Oh. So they were the bottom division winner.
Yep.
So, yeah, you've had 4 since in the 23 years, and then you had 3 in 35 years. So it is a little bit easier the way they've set it up. But still, 4-23, that's not the way I'd want to go. I don't think I'm gonna go in that direction next.
Welcome back to the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. He has on the line a half-hour show on basketball only if the Indiana Pacers win the finals, which he predicted before the start of Game 1. Game 5 is tonight, and the game starts at 7:30. How are you feeling about you were feeling probably better before Game 4.
Yeah, I was, but listen, I still like them. Right. I still like them. They're playing good. They're playing good. They just got to finish. Just got to finish games, and they'll be fine. But I still like them. They got fight in them.
They do. I do want to mention that I was having to fake trying to look and schedule when that half hour will be. I have no longer look to worry about scheduling it. I'm
that
feeling
confident.
No, I'm not that confident. If certainly believe that Indiana could win, and in fact, my only concern is that Oklahoma City better realize that. I think they're just a little bit better, and they had them in trouble. This was at some point in the last game. I actually thought, you know, Indiana's just better. They're defending Oklahoma City better, and then all of a sudden, I don't understand. All of a sudden, Indiana couldn't make any shots. Oklahoma City's making shots, and just at the point when I thought it was over and maybe the series was over, they come back and win. And so I don't know what to think other than that whenever a team is ahead, they usually lose.
Exactly. That's the nature of this series.
So it's been unbelievable. All right, most amazing thing ever in sports that you can remember for an end-of-the-game event. And maybe it's because I was so young, but I will never forget the final play in the Ice Bowl because I was so scared at the age of, 13? The first time in my life, I could not look at the TV. I was so scared. I turned in the other way and I heard, I don't know who it was, Race Guy, star, touchdown. Yes. As of course, if you don't know, while I grew up near Chicago, I was a Packer fan because I wasn't taught how to be a fan. I thought you took the teams that were the best. So I took the Packers and have been a fan ever since. And I ask this because I'm curious when other people think of one, and I'm sure there are others, but end of the game moment. Brian?
Yeah, I mean, to me, a lot of them, the one I remember clear as day watching with my dad and my brother sitting on the couch was the Jordan final shot against the Jazz, pushing
off.
And the shot, just clear as day. I mean, like, I vividly remember it against Russell, I believe.
Yes, yeah.
The slight push-off, step back, I mean, just unbelievable. Like, I remember it clear as day. Something that's burned into my memory forever.
Right, like, and you thought you were certain he was going to make it. I mean, that's the incredible confidence. It was like a putt for Tiger Woods. I don't know if I saw it, but I saw it a number of times. I'm not sure. Did you see when he hit the one to beat Cleveland? Was it Craig Elo that was guarding him? And back then, he wasn't Michael Jordan yet.
No, yeah. But it was every time, like when I was watching him grow up, you thought every time he shot in those situations, it was going in. Yep. That's just the way you felt when you watched Jordan. And you were sad when it didn't go in because you just thought for sure it was going to go in. Like, that's just how confident you were as a fan, like watching him play. And that was, and when they were in those NBA finals, when he got to the finals, it was just, they're going to win.
That's right.
They're going to win.
Never played a game seven. Nobody ever even got him to game seven. And my assessment of this is a realization that it's always going to depend on what team you were a fan of, that you're going to remember that the most. I mean, I'll never forget, you'll love this, being on the field when Wisconsin won the Rose Bowl the first time under Barry Alvarez. And I don't know who the quarterback from UCLA, they let us get on the field. And I'll never forget thinking, oh, my God, they're going to win the game. I mean, you knew they could, but it was at that point, and I don't know, he ran instead of threw. I don't know. It seemed like he made a stupid play, but so whatever someone's memory is, I understand it may not be the biggest, but it's going to be yours because of the team. But yes, yes, Michael Jordan has many, many. Yep. I don't know that you'll ever be as confident as a fan as you were then. Nobody.
No.
Maybe Tiger Nobody. Woods was.
Yeah, maybe Tiger. You'd feel good during, about Tiger.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're in a playoff. Other guys losing. All right, NBA coming up. The game starts at 7:30. The tip. Next.